Everybody keeps asking if I'm okay. But what do you say when you've been drowning so long? You don't even remember what breathing feels like anymore. I've been fighting my mind every night alone, trying to survive in a place that don't feel like home. People see my face, but they don't know how close I've been to emotionally letting go. I smile so nobody notices pain, but inside my thoughts been going insane. Every memory still leaves stains, and every heartbreak still remains. I gave love to people who disappeared, gave trust and got betrayal for years. Now every conversation feels weird, because attachment became connected to fear. And honestly, I'm exhausted deeply, tired of pretending life don't defeat me, tired of carrying trauma secretly, while everybody keeps expecting strength from me. I got nights where silence gets dangerous. That's when depression starts changing us, turning overthinking into self-destruction, till breathing itself feels painful enough. I can't save myself, no matter how hard I try. These thoughts keep pulling me under, while I'm screaming silently inside. Yeah. I'm losing this war with my mind, trying to survive time. And honestly, the hardest part is nobody seeing the pain I hide. Yeah. I remember nights sitting on my bedroom floor, asking God what I'm suffering for. Why every year hurts more and peace keeps walking out the door. I grew up believing pain was normal, that silence was safer than being emotional. So I buried feelings deep internally till depression started controlling me. Now my mind never rests peacefully, every thought attacks repeatedly, turning small problems into tragedies and happiness into uncertainty. People say just stay positive casually, like trauma disappears magically, but scars don't heal instantly, especially when they cut emotionally. And maybe that's why I turn to music, because speaking pain feels therapeutic. Maybe broken souls use lyrics to survive things too painful to deal with. I can't save myself, no matter. Sometimes I wonder if people would care if one day I disappear from here. Would they finally?
Tell me exactly what happened.
Oh my God.
Are you right by her now?
Yes.
Fire rescue's on the way. They're coming as fast as they can.
There was so much blood that when you looked at her, you didn't think that she was wearing any clothes.
Listen, you don't want that as your last memory.
A woman is murdered in cold blood, and investigators pull out all of the stops to try to figure out who was responsible.
Is it threatening calls or?
More like, oh, you're a leave my man alone.
What is more terrifying than being a female alone at home and someone's now inside your house and you're fighting for your life?
This is Tamarack, Florida. It's a very peaceful suburb of Fort Lauderdale. In fact, my grandma used to live there.
Tamarack, Florida in Broward County is very family oriented.
It's a fairly quiet area, Broward. It's predominantly a little older area. It was, you know, a lot of retirees that used to live there. It's not what I would consider a high crime area.
But on July 13th, 2022, at around 3 p.m., there is an emergency call placed to 911. And as first responders arrive on the scene, the caller meets them in the front yard of this apartment complex.
Yo! Yo! Yeah!
Oh, my God.
Do you see the police?
Yes, the police is with the paramedics as well.
Okay.
The Broward Sheriff's Office had received a 911 call from a male subject who stated that he had stopped by to visit a friend of his. After no response, he had tried the front door, found it unlocked. Upon opening the front door, he located her directly within 10 feet or so of the doorway, surrounded in a pool of blood.
Yeah, this building. This one here.
Are you with them now?
Yes, I'm with them now. Yeah, here, here.
Okay, all right. Well, go ahead and hang up. You can talk to them.
Does she live alone?
No, with her mom, but her mom is a flight attendant.
Is anybody
no,
in the house
no one
now?
There.
How do you have access to the house?
I think don't touch anything. Okay. Your hands exactly the way they are.
This 911 caller, Rivelto Robinson, shows first responders to his girlfriend's apartment, 23-year-old Kayla Hodgson.
What number?
How did you get access?
I don't have access. I've been calling her all morning, and she wasn't answering the phone. And I came here the first time, and I just knocked. So when I came back the second time, I see her car outside. I'm like, she has to be here. So when I came, I knocked really hard, and she has a little dog, and she didn't answer. So I just tried the door, and when I opened the door, she was on the floor.
The door was unlocked?
Yeah, the door was unlocked.
Have you been in the house?
Just have, yes, when okay. I just came the second time.
Did you
time.
See anybody in the residence?
No.
The apartment's a four-story building. It's a newer complex. The apartment's located on the second floor, and it was sort of open air on the ends of the hallways.
Her phone was delivering
it to me.
It's like my girlfriend.
Your girlfriend? No,
yes,
that's fine.
Yes. Right here. No children, just a little dog. To the left.
One person's got to go in. That's it.
Once you enter the apartment, the victim, Kayla Hodgson, was laying approximately 10 feet inside the front doorway.
Yeah, right here. She's going to be right there when you go in. Yeah, she's right there.
There was blood surrounding her. There was blood impressions that were on the floor. They looked and checked the bedrooms and the bathrooms. They found Kayla's dog in one of the bedrooms, and they exited the apartment and alerted the homicide detectives.
We ultimately got the call to respond out and take over the investigation.
How long have you been together?
Hey, listen, I'm sorry you're going through this. We're going to do everything we can to help you out. We'll be here for you. We're going to have a million questions to ask you. Just bear with us.
There appears to be drag marks in blood. And where the drag marks led, that's what led to the top of Kayla's head. And Kayla was on the floor. She was incredibly bloody. There was so much blood that when you looked at her, you didn't think that she was wearing any clothes, but she in fact did have a robe on, but the robe was fully soaked in blood, so it just looked like more blood.
Yeah. It's from me off of my chest. They told the paramedics to me on the phone.
Kayla suffered approximately 36 different stab or slash wounds, the majority of which were kind of concentrated along her left side to her face and neck.
She suffered a very lengthy, incised sharp force injury that went down the side of her face. She also suffered a stab wound to her neck that punctured her jugular vein. It was clear from the injuries that this person wanted Kayla dead. The medical examiner determined that the manner of death was a homicide and the cause of death was multiple sharp force injuries.
But who would want to kill Kayla Hodgson?
Kayla was a bright, bubbly woman in her 20s who appeared to be living her best life. She was loved very dearly by her family and her friends. Kayla worked as a bottle service girl. She worked for a company called Bar Dolls. She also worked privately for herself.
She had a couple different jobs, but she would work in the service industry as far as bottle service, waitress, server, bartending, and would travel a lot between New York and Tamarack.
She lived in Tamarack with her mother, and her mother had a very close relationship.
Kayla, from what I could tell, comes from a loving family. Her mother, Diane, described her as a beautiful person who just was real loving of life and just being a young 20-something, just enjoying every minute of it, traveling with friends and just experiencing life.
The Beautiful Game is back on Love Island 2026.
We've got a squad of wildies and a bench full.
Now, as law enforcement starts securing the crime scene, members of Kayla's family start arriving at the apartment.
Hey, when's the last time you spoke to her? When's the last time you spoke to your cousin?
We spoke on Instagram, I think, yesterday. Yep. I see my cousin all the time.
Hey, listen, where's her mom?
Her mom is a flight attendant. She's okay. Working on a flight. I just finally got in touch with her. She's coming back right now.
Kayla's cousin learned that Kayla was deceased, and she was extremely distraught. Understandable. Can you imagine when you just learn that your relative is dead in their apartment at such a young age?
Melanie. Is anybody here with you, Melanie?
My family.
All right, well, let's go back over to your family.
Let's walk over there, okay?
Yeah, let's go over to your family.
I'll talk to you and I'll talk to you. Need help getting up? Come on, dude. We'll help you. You okay?
Kayla's mother, Diana, arrives home just 5 hours after her daughter's body was discovered.
Kayla lived with her mom in this apartment, but she was a flight attendant and she was actually working flying when this happened. And she had to be notified. She had to get a phone call telling her that her daughter was dead.
Mom, do you want to sit down? You guys can hang out here if you want.
Can we go there? It's just more privacy.
I understand, ma'am. We're going to be bringing the body down pretty soon.
And Kayla's brother has now also arrived at Kayla and his mom's apartment.
Sorry. Kayla, you're right. I know. I'm sorry.
Sir,
she's no longer here.
Where is she?
She went in the van, sir. Can I help you up?
When law enforcement is investigating and preserving a crime scene, they have to be able to work and kind of had to help the family member up and escort them away so they could keep working on Kayla's death.
In just an absolutely devastating scene captured on police's body cam, Kayla's family asks to pray over Kayla's body before she's transported to the morgue.
We know. Listen, you don't want that as your last memory. I promise. You don't want that as your last memory.
Thank you very much.
All right, I'm very sorry for your mom.
Where's the guy? guy with the drugs? Is he detained? Is he being investigated?
Of course, investigators need to interview the person that found Kayla's body, then 31-year-old Revelto Robinson.
Sir, I'm very sorry for your loss.
Told that your boyfriend?
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Why don't we step over here? I kind of just want to get a statement from you as to how things transpired.
One of the first things we do on scene is speak with the witness. My partner was there a few moments before me, so he'd already begun doing that and kind of gave me a brief on what the 911 caller had stated. I then met with him as well.
Do you remember the first time you attempted to reach out to Kayla?
It was early, so around 10, 11 probably.
10, 11. How did you reach out to her?
I called her.
Called her?
I called her multiple times.
He referred to Kayla as his kind of sort of girlfriend. And again, he alluded to the fact that while they were friends, they were more than friends. They may not have been exclusive, but was kind of his girlfriend.
You think it was 10 or 11. I think you were going to check, but you had said you deleted the text messages.
Yeah, I deleted them because she had me upset because I thought like she was ignoring me because I just got back from seeing my girl. So usually we go through these walls every time I go see my girl. She feels some type of way or whatever.
So she knew you went to go see your girl?
Yeah, me and her are very transparent with our situation.
Okay, all right. How quickly do you delete the messages and the phone calls?
After I came here, I didn't see her car. And I knocked on the door and she didn't answer. I'm like, out of here, like now I'm hot.
He also was able to tell them that he had been upset with Kayla and deleted all her contacts. Now they're trying to figure out a motive and a person that killed Kayla. And when you hear that he was mad enough to delete all the contacts, they have to investigate further. Did that mean he was mad enough to do anything else to Kayla?
When you were calling her earlier, was it going straight to voicemail or was it just ringing?
No, all right, so that's also what got me upset that made me delete her number. Because at first it was ringing and then all of a sudden it just went. It was nothing. It wasn't even answering machine. It just said call fail. But then when I called on my other phone, it was ringing out. So then that's what kind of like got me upset.
Revelto Robinson goes into greater detail about how he found Kayla.
Now I'm banging on the door. I'm like, of course, I'm banging on the door. And then I checked the door open. And she was right there.
He was the last person to physically see Kayla before she left the apartment. So Revelto was able to provide a timeline of when he had gone to visit Kayla the previous night at her apartment. They also used the timeline of when he was calling Kayla to show that this is definitely a time period when she was already deceased.
While the blood on Revelto's hands is certainly suspicious, investigators determined that he got the blood on him while he was trying to give Kayla CPR.
When detectives spoke to Revelto, there was no one that came to mind who would want to do this to Kayla that he was aware of. And even though he had a girlfriend also in New York, he confirmed for law enforcement that his girlfriend was in New York on that particular day and that his girlfriend had never had any issues with Kayla and didn't even know that Kayla existed.
At the morgue, Kayla's body provides investigators with a clue of who could have done this to her.
The numerous defensive wounds that Kayla suffered showed us that Kayla fought for her life to the very end. Kayla had false nails on, and so there were a couple of her nails that had been ripped off while she was fighting for her life, and those nails were also located inside of the apartment.
The number of stab wounds, the location of the stab wounds, the fact that she had defensive wounds, she was fighting back, that meant that the attacker, the murderer, was someone who was acting with a vengeance. Really, this type of crime implies that it was done out of anger, heat of passion, or in the moment.
The crime scene itself is extremely bloody. It is clear that there was some sort of struggle that happened inside Kayla's apartment.
There was blood that had been spattered on the walls in the entryway.
She was surrounded in a pool of blood. There wasn't any noticeable weapons left on scene. We didn't see any knives, but one thing we did note at the time was there was a large glass hookah that was broken and lying partially underneath Kayla and around her. It's a large shards of glass. Later on, we collected that and determined that a large portion of the glass part of the hookah bottle, the stem area, was missing from the scene.
And Kayla's dog provides investigators with another lead.
Kayla had a small dog. His name was Dior. The 911 caller said one of the first things he found odd was that when he knocked on the door, it sounded like the dog was almost locked in the spare bedroom of the apartment. Ultimately, find the dog in the spare bedroom. The door was shut. One of the things you noticed was the dog had some blood on its paws, which gave us the impression that it was obviously out when this attack occurred and someone had put him behind that door and closed it.
At first glance, there is nothing that stands out inside Kayla's apartment that would lead to any suspect. So investigators, they have to go to the surveillance footage, any surveillance footage that exists outside of Kayla's apartment.
This one has a ring camera.
While the crime scene was being processed, detectives went to the apartment complex and obtained surveillance footage for the building that Kayla lived in and also the building that was right next to Kayla's building.
Kayla's apartment was located on the second floor. On each side of her apartment were two different apartments on the opposite side of the hallway, and both were equipped with doorbell surveillance cameras. Unfortunately, the one to the west, that camera was not functioning properly. That one would be the best because it did show a portion of Kayla's door. It may have captured the exchange that occurred at that door, but there was a surveillance doorbell camera on the east side of Kayla's apartment, and we were able to collect that.
With the apartment surveillance footage and the Ring doorbell footage in hand, investigators start putting together a timeline.
The footage from the apartment complex and from the doorbell Ring cameras, it matched with Rivelto's timeline of events of him going to Kayla's apartment and when Kayla was leaving for work.
So Rivelto Robinson is officially cleared as a person of interest here.
We were able to see when Kayla had left, when she had returned home that evening. So that timeline was important. We were able to really start branching out from there, see who's moving around the complex at that point.
Law enforcement saw a person of interest that arrived at the apartment building at approximately 2 a.m. And this woman was dressed in dark clothing with a baseball hat, a COVID mask, and was also carrying a food bag that belonged to Shake Shack.
There was a black female who was wearing all black. She had on a New York Yankees hat, black pants, and a black jacket. And she just seemed to be kind of milling about the location. She's going up and down stairwells, back and forth through hallways.
From approximately 2 a.m. to 4:45 a.m., this same person would go from Kayla's building to the building next to Kayla's building. They observed this person looking at the mailboxes and just moving in a suspicious way.
That in and of itself, somebody at 4 a.m., staking out an apartment is suspicious, but add to that the apparent disguise so that the person would not be identified.
Ultimately, we were able to track her through multiple locations. Her movements, her demeanor just really raised a red flag with her. After Kayla arrives home, we see the suspect one more time walking pretty fast towards Kayla's apartment from another building. But she did all of a sudden have a sense of urgency in her walk, and that was within a minute or two of Kayla arriving home.
And would you look?
Look, Kayla's story is incredibly disturbing. And this is a story we wanted to bring to you for quite some time. We are able to do this. We're able to put a project like this together.
Detectives were able to see the suspect walk past the doors that kind of led up to Kayla's apartment.
We don't see the suspect again on the video for upwards to almost an hour. You could tell right away it was the same suspect just based on her build. She had a very distinct build about her, and she's now wearing a different outfit.
The suspect was seen very clear on camera leaving Kayla's apartment building dressed in a hoodie that Kayla's mom identified as being from their residence. There was also a pair of sandals that both Kayla and her mom shared, and the suspect was seen leaving in those sandals. The suspect was also carrying a shopping bag that was identified as being removed from that apartment as well.
There are so many different reasons why that would be suspicious in my mind. Number one, why would she be wearing Kayla's clothes? Number two, why did she change clothes at all? And number three, is she just trying to disguise her appearance and perhaps make people think it was Kayla leaving the apartment?
When detectives saw that the suspects left in different clothing, it's definitely suspicious. But when that clothing upon leaving is the clothing of the victim, then it tells us that this suspect was definitely inside of Kayla's apartment, because that would be the only way you can obtain these items.
Kayla Hodgson's fingernail provides investigators with another clue.
The DNA that was located under Kayla's fingernails was processed, and that DNA came back to a single female source.
So who exactly is this mystery woman that was caught on the surveillance footage? Well, investigators speak with the people who knew Kayla best.
Detectives then tried to figure out who had problems with Kayla. Was there anyone in Kayla's life that would want Kayla dead? When they spoke to the owner of Bar Dolls, Kayla's employer, she couldn't think of anyone that had any problems with Kayla. When they spoke to Kayla's mom, the only thing that Kayla's mom knew was that there had been a girl that had been making prank phone calls on her phone, but she didn't really have any further details other than that.
I had made contact with a few friends of Kayla's and asked them to meet with me so I could see if there was anyone that fits this description that Kayla may have had a problem with.
This would be a tape sworn statement of Janisa Tate. We're here today discussing the death of Kayla Hodgson. And from my understanding, you are the best friend of Kayla. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And you mentioned prior to going on tape that you guys had both been in New York recently from July 6th to July 9th. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the last time you actually saw Kayla was when?
The 9th.
Janisa Tate was Kayla's best friend. They were thick as thieves. They worked together at Bar Dolls. Wherever Kayla was, Janisa was also. They traveled to New York together. They would work parties in New York together.
From my understanding, Kayla was dating a guy who had a girlfriend down here in Florida by the name of Rivalto Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know him by Rivalto, or would, how do you say his name?
Velt.
Velt, okay. Mm-hmm. I've heard several names, V, Vel, Velt. Velt, okay. Mm-hmm. Besides V, who else was Kayla seeing as far as guys or girls go?
There was a guy named Shakur. There was a guy named Terrence.
Okay, is he from New York or Broward?
Terrence lives in New York.
And is Terrence the only one from New York?
Yes.
We were able to establish this relationship between Kayla and this person in New York by the name of Terry Thermagene.
Kayla's relationship with Terry Thermagene appeared to be a relationship where whenever Kayla was in New York, Terry, who had a liking for Kayla, would take Kayla out to dinner. If Terry Thermagene was ever in the South Florida area, Kayla and Terry would meet up for dinner. When they weren't in the same city, Terry would send food to Kayla. So that was the extent of what we knew about their relationship.
So now here's another good lead. In that surveillance footage, this mystery woman outside Kayla's apartment was carrying a bag of food.
Terrence in New York, he would send food via Uber Eats. So it's a natural assumption to think if anyone was delivering food in Florida at 4 a.m., that this could have been an Uber Eats.
We know Terrence has a girlfriend.
Correct. Well, he doesn't claim the girlfriend, but yes, he has a girlfriend.
As far as you know, who does she have problems with? Is anyone harassing her, bothering her, anyone she's in like active problem with?
The only person she's ever had an active problem with, because Kayla doesn't have problems with nobody, male or female, like she doesn't entertain it. She would normally just ignore it, would be Terrence's girlfriend. Literally the first day they met, she messaged her on Instagram.
And what was that problem they had?
Basically, she reached out to Kayla, you know, to see if Kayla was with the gentleman, Terrence. I have a screenshot of their DMs when she DM'd her.
They just met that day. Why is this girl DMing her right away?
That's exactly what Kayla thought. And when Kayla messaged the gentleman and asked him, you know, you have a girlfriend you didn't let me know about, he denied it. He said he don't have no girlfriend. He doesn't know none of that. Like, he has an ex. That's what he claimed it as, his ex. So Kayla continued to speak to him.
Hi, I'm Kalina.
This is clearly a very messy situationship, and investigators need to figure out who is dating who and who specifically was DMing Kayla about Terrence.
What made that girl know about Kayla?
The 29th, me and Kayla worked a party. So the party we worked in New York, they came.
When you say they, you mean Terrence and
Terrence and his friends. So okay. We go back there now, and Kayla and him are kicking it off. He takes off his ring and puts it on Kayla's hand. So now all of the friends that are around are recording videos and stuff like that, and one of them is recording Kayla, and you see the ring on the hand.
It's like a real distinctive ring?
Yeah, it's a big ring.
Okay.
I think I have a video of it. Very big, distinct ring. Kayla's dancing, and you see the ring, and Kayla's like, with the ring, you know, she doesn't think nothing of it. The next day, they get a DM from the girlfriend.
So the screenshot's basically saying, like, asking Kayla if she's with this guy now.
Correct.
But Kayla didn't respond to that?
No. She responded to the first two in the beginning, you know, like, because the girl reached out, and she's like, in regards to what? And then she was like, the guy with the braids, was he trying to talk to you, or do y'all talk? The guy with the braids is Terrence. And then, of course, Kayla didn't respond. That's when she called the guy and was like, you know, a girl messaging me, is that your girlfriend? They went out to dinner. And when they went out to dinner the next day in the morning, she messaged her again. It's you not answering when you could be a female. The sick part is, if y'all really talking and hanging out, I want you to know I'm not coming easy on either of y'all.
On her top there, there's a picture of her?
Yeah, that's her.
Underneath Shaki, it says Sakina, S-A-K-I-Y-N-A?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how do we know that she's involved with Terrence, this Sakina? How do you know that's Terrence she's referring to?
All on her page, you see Terrence.
We do know that he did have a girlfriend in New York, Sakina Thompson. And at some point, Sakina had become aware of Kayla, and there had been messages exchanged. But from what I could tell on Kayla's end, there was really no real earth-shattering news that, okay, don't talk to Terry anymore. She was still going about her life.
Sakina lived in New York and worked as a nail tech. Sakina believed that she and Terry were together, girlfriend, boyfriend, no questions asked, no doubt, they were together.
Kayla's best friend, Janisa, also reveals one more important aspect of the communication between Kayla and Sakina.
In the beginning of last month, she was getting harassed with prank calls.
And with those prank calls, what was being said? Was it threatening calls or?
More like, you're a leave my man alone. Kayla would answer the phone, and she swore it was a person from New York because the person on the phone said dead ass, and that's like something New York people say, you know?
And it was always the same girl's voice?
It was always the same voice, yeah. She said, like, they would be silent for a good minute, then I would have to scream hello just for them to say hello. Like, what the f-? Then at the end, she was like, you know you're a f-, right? And I was like, yeah, I know. Tell me something else. Then the would go quiet.
The day Kayla was found dead in her apartment, both her mother, Diana, and her sort of boyfriend, Roberto Robinson, mentioned something in their statements to police that proved to be a crucial clue.
Is there anything you can think of that I didn't ask you that you think might be important?
She don't have problems. Like, she's a very happy, good-looking person. The only thing, like, a couple weeks ago, she was getting, like, prank calls, but she didn't get into details about it.
We did receive information from friends and family that Kayla had recently, you know, for the past couple weeks, if not a couple months prior to the homicide, she had begun to get what she would refer to as prank calls from a female.
Kayla's best friend, Janisa Tate, who's being interviewed by police in Broward County, reveals that she saw Sakina Thompson in person in New York.
He's calling her the whole time she's driving there and telling her, don't go inside, please don't go inside, I'm begging you, don't go inside, Showtime, don't go inside. And I'm looking at her and I'm telling her, like, the girl has to be inside, you know? Like, there's no other reason why he don't want you to go in. So we ended up pulling up to Showtime and he ends up calling her because he sees us park. And he's like, come to my car. So I ended up just still going inside. I text her first and I was like, the girlfriend is here. I seen her at the end of the bar waiting.
So you saw her in there and she's just sitting there by herself? Was she with anyone?
By herself, hands crossed at the end of the bar, no drink in front of her, just sitting there. But that's where the guy was, the guy that I was going to go meet. And I gave him a hug. And then I looked down and I seen her. And when she seen me, she looked at me, then she looked past me, and she didn't see Kayla. So then she sat there for a little minute, you know, waiting to see if she's gonna come. Then the place was closed, and then she got up and she left.
So Kayla never came in?
They went to a different place together, him okay. and her.
Since Janisa knows what Sakina looks like, investigators show her the surveillance footage from the night that Kayla was murdered.
When Janisa watched the video surveillance from the apartment complex, one of the things that she recognized was the profile of the suspect. She recognized that the female in the video had a large bust. She recognized the walk of the suspect.
What was it about that video that made you think Sakina?
She's very stocky, so she walks with her breasts high, and she has like a deep walk. It's a very distinct walk, like you have a distinct walk because of the way how your breast is, and she has humongous breasts, and the side profile of her face just gives it away. And then her walk is just like B5 full, like she stomps when she walks.
Like a heavy walk.
Yeah. It just makes sense that it's her, like, she was really mentally psyched. The girl would not leave Kayla alone. Mind you, this guy talks to many other girls in New York. I've gone to New York and I've gone out and he's with a different female. But I think the fact that Kayla was gorgeous, you know, Terrence was just after her and it was persistent and he would work on it. He would fly her out. He would send her food. Like, you know, it was persistent. I feel like she felt like she was a threat.
Ultimately, one of her friends was able to provide me with an Instagram page for this female, Sakina Thompson.
Hey guys, my name is Sakina. I'm from New York. I'm a full-time nail technician. I don't really know what to say, but just welcome to my channel. I didn't really want the first video to be like, just smack right into something. But I'll be doing beauty, hair, mostly nails and makeup, swatches, stuff like that. Calls, outfit of the days, basically everything.
Detective Kuchler then scrolled Sakina Thompson's Instagram account. He noticed that there were certain clothing items that the suspect was wearing in the apartment complex surveillance that was of a clothing brand that he also found Sakina Thompson wearing in pictures on her Instagram account.
Y'all see that? I always try to play my cooking, but I'm the best baker ever in that family, so I lose hair.
There was also a pair of Prada shoes that the suspect was wearing, and these exact same Prada shoes were found on Sakina Thompson's Instagram profile with her wearing those same exact shoes. He also zoomed in on when the suspect was holding up her cell phone.
One of the things that really stood out was her cell phone cover. At some point on the video, the suspect pretended like they were looking at the mailboxes for the apartment complex and at the same time flipped over their phone. And when they flipped the phone over, I could see the wallpaper on her phone screen. And just so happens on Sakina Thompson's Instagram, she's holding her phone out in her hand and the same wallpapers observed on that photo.
Sakina had a pretty good social media presence, and she would post things about her relationship, including with Terry, and that may not be unusual, but they were a little bit toxic.
I ain't gonna lie, I like flirting just to see if I still got it, but linking up? Nah, that's crazy.
Every time Kayla would question Terry about Sakina Thompson, Terry would tell her, she's crazy, she's my ex-girlfriend, you don't have to worry about her. And so that was the only reason why Kayla didn't put too much stock into Sakina Thompson is because Terry was continually telling her that this is just a crazy ex that you don't have to worry about.
Why are you acting so nervous? And why are you sweating so much? And why do you look so hungry? And
No, wait, it's not what you think. This is a big misunderstanding. You've got to believe me. Listen, I am telling you. You better listen to me, SpongeBob.
You like Krabby Patties, don't you, Squidward?
She would talk about hitting Terry and him cheating and different things that would perhaps trigger her.
You know that I throw hands, right? You know that I throw hands, right? You know that I throw hands, right? You know that I throw hands, right?
Oh!
Investigators tracked the phone number from the WhatsApp messages that Janisa provided.
That cell phone number also came back to Sakina Thompson. It allowed me to obtain a search warrant for her historical cell phone data, which was able to help place her in South Florida at the time of Kayla Hodgson's murder.
Detective Ian Kuchler was able to identify that a Sakina Thompson had traveled from New York City to Fort Lauderdale prior to the homicide.
Just be talking about, I mean, thinking I ain't gonna go look on their page, I'd be looking at y'all page.
In the early morning hours, around 1 a.m. on July 13th, that cell phone traveled to the area of Kayla Hodgson's residence, remained there for several hours, and then left around 6 a.m., returning back to a hotel that we ultimately found that Sakina Thompson had booked a hotel room at. And that was significant because we were able to match it with some later video that we obtained from outside Kayla's apartment complex, showing the suspect being picked up by a rideshare and taken back to her hotel that she had booked. Video surveillance time was accurate with the cell phone data showing the cell phone traveling as well. So we knew that the person we're seeing on that video surveillance traveling from Kayla Hodgson's residence to the hotel was Sakina Thompson.
And then we again come back to that bag of food that this mystery woman on the surveillance footage was carrying.
Sakina Thompson, when she checked in at the hotel she was staying at, she had ordered fast food from a local establishment. And that same bag was brought by her to the crime scene. Having that information and showing her carrying that particular bag gave us the impression that maybe she utilized it as a ruse to pretend as a delivery, someone bringing food late at night. Because we do know that Sakina Thompson's boyfriend, Terry Thermogene, had in the past sent mobile food orders to Kayla after work late at night. If Kayla looks out the peephole, sees this female standing there holding a fast food bag, gives me the impression she might have utilized that to try to get her trust to open the door.
Sakina had this whole ruse planned out. She even set up a fake rideshare account to conceal her identity.
The rideshares that Sakina Thompson utilized were both established under different names on the same day within minutes, but they were both under false names. Sakina Thompson utilized these sort of made up rideshare accounts to get to and from the homicide.
So investigators believe the combination of the digital data, the social media posts, the surveillance footage all point towards premeditation.
We know there's a relationship between Sakina and Terry, Terry and Kayla. We know there's been some bad blood in the past where there's been messages exchanged. And Kayla had just been in New York, and we do know that she had contact with Terry while she was up there. The best we could tell is that Sakina had caught wind that Terry had seen Kayla. That was on July 9th.
I'm gonna go buy me a gun. And I'm gonna come back here and set this off.
So on July 10th, Sakina Thompson books her flight. By July 12th, she's here in South Florida. One of the things that came up is intent here. Somebody flies from New York, books a hotel. In such short period between July 9th and July 12th, this was all planned out. You had plenty of time to rethink your actions. So someone that comes down, even if in a heat of moment, you're on a plane for 3 hours, you've now booked a hotel, you're now in South Florida, you have time to change course.
And investigators also discovered that almost a year prior to the murder, Sakina appeared to be digitally stalking Kayla.
We later found out the original Instagram interactions had occurred a lot further back than we were initially told.
Janisa provided screenshots that showed that approximately a year prior to Kayla being murdered, Sakina Thompson reached out to Kayla on her Instagram account and had asked to speak to Kayla, and she wanted Kayla to call her. And at that point, Kayla blocked Sakina Thompson, never responded to her messages. A couple of months later, whenever Kayla would message Terry, somehow Sakina Thompson would see these messages, and now she had Kayla's phone number, and she messaged Kayla again, threatening messages, calling her names, telling her, you know, about messing with Terry, and again, Kayla blocks her. Months later, Kayla sends a message to Terry, and this time Sakina Thompson, it appears, then took Terry's phone and responded to Kayla from Terry's phone. And this was the only time that we had evidence of that Kayla ever sent a message back to Sakina Thompson. Sakina Thompson sent to Kayla a picture of Sakina and Terry in bed kissing. And when she sent this picture, the words that came with the picture was basically telling Kayla that we're good here. And Kayla responded to Sakina Thompson by texting Terry's phone back, "You just love to kiss the lips that be on my P word." After that, Kayla stopped communicating.
Investigators now have a theory as to what really happened the morning that Kayla was murdered.
We know that shortly after Kayla had left for work, Sakina Thompson arrived at the apartment complex around 1 a.m. She spends the next 3 hours walking around that apartment complex. The last video we have of Kayla Hodgson is showing her walking home after what probably was a long night, being on her feet, talking to people. You can just see in her movements, she's just tired and probably glad to be home. She's home safe in her mind. Shortly thereafter, we see Sakina rushing towards the apartment where Kayla had just gone into. How Sakina accessed that apartment, we're not certain. But what we do know for certain is at some point, the front door to the apartment's opened, most likely by Kayla, seeing who's at the door. And right inside that front doorway, that's where we can see from the evidence that a struggle ensues and there is damage to the walls. There's exchange of blood onto the walls. It actually proceeds down a hallway a little bit to the left. Kayla was fighting for her life in that apartment. What is more terrifying than being a female alone at home and someone's now inside your house and you're fighting for your life? The amount of blood, even after she had been stabbed, you can see that she was still trying to fight and move about. If the attack proceeded into the apartment a little bit, it actually ended up coming back ultimately to the front door. Maybe she's trying to get the suspect out, push her out, struggling with her. But at some point, the injuries she sustained were just too much. Kayla ultimately came to rest behind the front door.
Now, if you're watching what we do here,
at this point in the investigation, we're now within 2 weeks of the homicide occurring. An arrest warrant was issued. I traveled to New York, Queens area to locate Sakina with the assistance of the NYPD and the U.S. Marshals. And ultimately, she was taken into custody by August 3rd of 2022. Her purse contained her ticket with the airline leaving South Florida. Sakina was ultimately charged with murder in the first degree. Sakina never spoke with us. She had invoked her rights and had an attorney representing her, so we never had the opportunity to really get her side of the story. Once Sakina was taken into custody in New York, she remained there from August 3rd till October 18th. She was extradited down here to Broward County and was able to obtain her DNA with the assistance of crime scene. That DNA was submitted and confirmed that the DNA on Kayla Hodgson's fingernail was in fact Sakina Thompson's.
As the prosecution, we're not allowed to talk to defendants. The only way that we can kind of get a picture into their minds is to use whatever evidence we have available. And the evidence that I had available was her Instagram records. And so I studied those records. I saw how she communicated with other women that she suspected of dealing with Terry. I saw the lifestyle that she portrayed to live. And I used that to prepare myself for trial.
On September 30th, 2025, the trial of Sakina Thompson kicks off and begins with opening statements, and it starts with the prosecutor, Tanya Johnson.
Everything went according to plan, except being discovered. Dragged Kayla out of the way in her own blood, away from the door, and left disguised in Kayla's attire.
But the defense, they have their own version of events leading up to the killing of Kayla Hodgson.
This woman-to-woman conversation that Sakina had in mind had escalated.
On the ninth day of the trial, the defense calls Sakina Thompson to the stand to testify in her own defense.
She just starts grabbing my hair and punching me.
Sakina testified, claiming it was self-defense. One thing a jury always notices is the demeanor of a defendant when they testify, even when they're sitting at counsel's table. And she had somewhat of a flat effect. She wasn't overly emotional about any of this.
I told her I was pregnant, so I felt like she was trying to hurt me and my baby. I didn't just fight for me, I fought for me and my baby.
Sakina Thompson testified that when she went to confront Kayla woman to woman, she was 2 months pregnant. This is a hard fact to absorb, because if you are 2 months pregnant, why are you even gonna go confront someone you've never met? Maybe they're violent, maybe they're gonna hurt you. You would want to not even go in the first place. But also, it could have the opposite effect. It could make a jury more sympathetic to her, knowing that while she was 2 months pregnant, she had a baby.
Once she told Kayla that she was pregnant, she testified that Kayla got upset and Kayla attacked her and Kayla tried to slash her stomach. And it was at that point that she blacked out, and whatever resulted after the blackout is what happened, even though she didn't want to testify as to details.
But on cross, the prosecution challenges Sakina's claim of self-defense.
Punching me.
Punching you where?
My face.
Where on your face? Point to it for it.
I don't remember, but everywhere on my face.
You don't remember where she was punching you in your face?
In my face.
I was able to bring out who Sakina Thompson is, the same affect that she displayed when she was taking the flight back to New York is the same affect that she displayed on the stand. To take a person's life in self-defense and be justified in doing that, there's a human aspect to that. Like, you come off as being very distraught of having to take another human being's life. And she did not have that affect on the stand.
I mean, this is why you killed her, right?
No.
You didn't kill her because she was fighting you?
No, I killed her because she took the glass from the hookah and slashed me across my stomach.
She tried to portray it as a person that was just really concerned for her unborn child. But after this alleged attack of Kayla slashing her on her stomach, she never went to seek any medical help. She never went to the hospital. She didn't testify about anything that she did afterwards that would be consistent with someone being slashed in the stomach.
After closing arguments, the jury goes to deliberate.
When the jurors went back to deliberate, I'm always nervous for the family because my main priority is for them to have justice, and justice would only come from a guilty verdict.
The jury comes back with their verdict after 1 hour of deliberations, and they find Sakina Thompson guilty of the first-degree murder of Kayla Hodgson.
Once the verdict came in, I was extremely relieved and very happy for Kayla's mom.
Now, before the judge officially hands down Sakina Thompson's sentence, the friends and family of Kayla deliver their victim impact statements.
Ghost, your arm.
Good afternoon, Judge. To the reason that we are all here today, first, I want you to take a look and see how many people dearly love my sister. There are many more, and I can't say the same for you. This type of love and support will never go away. For the rest of your existence, you will have to look in the mirror every day, regret your decisions, and think about how foolish you are. I hope all your nights are filled with regret and loneliness, that you will never be able to see or hold your family again.
I'm Melanie, Kayla's biological cousin and big sister at heart. On July 13th, around 3:30, I received a phone call that Kayla was found dead in her home. The very first question I asked God in the midst of all my tears laying on the floor was, who would do this to Kayla? You see, Kayla was the type of person that you didn't get to meet twice in life. She had a spirit that shined so bright, every single room she walked into would light up like Times Square on New Year's Eve. Who gave you the right to come into her home and do this to her? Tell me what you thought every time you searched One Princess K on Instagram. You've seen a beautiful girl with a banging body, vibrant personality, the complete, total opposite from what you see when you stand in front of the mirror. That killed you so much, you wanted to damage her face. But know this, if Kayla was alive, even with those scars on her face, she would have still been the most beautiful girl in the room. She would be more gorgeous than you could ever be. Your mind is so warped, because the only person who benefited in this whole situation was Terry. He finally got to get rid of you. He can now enjoy his life without having to ever worry about you stalking another female interest he may have or toxically attacking him again. I now beg the judge to grant my family the peace we deserve and throw you in jail for the rest of your worthless life without the possibility of any parole.
So after listening to Kayla's loved ones' emotional statements, the judge has a few words of his own.
I do believe the defendant's in this particular situation's crime was heinous in the way she tracked down, located, showed up, and then killed. And with that, the court does sentence Ms. Thompson to life in prison. Under Florida's criminal punishment code, that's without parole. And she will serve the remainder of her life in prison.
Her family and friends came color coordinated in Kayla's favorite color to trial. And once sentencing came, they all had coordinated shirts. It was always obvious to me from day one that Kayla was very loved and Kayla is very missed and that she had a lot of friends and family support.
Thank you very much. Our business is concluded for the day.
Sakina Thompson had her baby while she was in jail.
When she gave birth to the child, Terry Thermogene finally came to light or came out of the shadows in a sense and arrived here in South Florida, gave us the opportunity to meet with him. He was a gentleman. We discussed the case briefly. He wanted to speak to his attorney before going further, and I've never had another opportunity to speak to him after that. He took custody of the child.
It's just so sad to think the life of this young woman as she was just entering into adulthood being snuffed out because another woman felt threatened by her.
I was pleased with the guilty verdict, but there's no pleasure in a case like this. You know, you have Sakina Thompson, who's going to spend the rest of her life in jail. You have a child without their mother now. And you have Kayla Hodgson, most importantly, her family, they don't have her to even visit. There's no pleasure in a conviction on a case, especially like this. It's over a guy. Young girls fighting over a guy, if you want to kind of simplify it. But the reality is there's much more to it, and that lies with Sakina Thompson. That's where her mental state or morals or thought process come into play.
It is very sad to see such a life tragically lost at such a young age for nothing. This was over nothing. There was no threat that Kayla could ever have to Sakina Thompson, who has a relationship with Terry all the way in New York. And so to go to such lengths to fly down here and kill someone, I mean, it's very scary that there are people in this world that are capable of doing that. And Kayla did not deserve what happened to her, especially in the sanctity of her own home.
Everybody keeps asking if I'm okay. But what do you say when you've been drowning so long? You don't even remember what breathing feels like anymore. I've been fighting my mind every night alone, trying to survive in a place that don't feel like home. People see my face, but they don't know how close I've been to emotionally letting go. I smile so nobody notices pain, but inside my thoughts been going insane. Every memory still leaves stains, and every heartbreak still remains. I gave love to people who disappeared, gave trust and got betrayal for years. Now every conversation feels weird, because attachment became connected to fear. And honestly, I'm exhausted deeply, tired of pretending life don't defeat me. Tired of carrying trauma secretly, while everybody keeps expecting strength from me. I got nights where silence gets dangerous. That's when depression starts changing us, turning overthinking into self-destruction, till breathing itself feels painful enough. I can't save myself, no matter how hard I try. These thoughts keep pulling me under, while I'm screaming silently inside. Yeah. I'm losing this war with my mind, trying to survive. Time. And honestly, the hardest part is nobody seeing the pain I hide. Yeah. I remember nights sitting on my bedroom floor, asking God what I'm suffering for. Why every year hurts more and peace keeps walking out the door. I grew up believing pain was normal, that silence was safer than being emotional. So I buried feelings deep internally till depression started controlling me. Now my mind never rests peacefully, every thought attacks repeatedly, turning small problems into tragedies and happiness into uncertainty. People say just stay positive casually, like trauma disappears magically, but scars don't heal instantly, especially when they cut emotionally. And maybe that's why I turn to music, because speaking pain feels therapeutic. Maybe broken souls use lyrics to survive things too painful to deal with. I can't save myself, no matter. Sometimes I wonder if people would care if one day I disappear from here. Would they finally?